Chapter 5. If guests at the canyon will take this book in hand, and, line by line, read this chapter, just as they would listen to the talk of a friend in whose knowledge they confide, they will leave the canyon with fewer erroneous conceptions than are quite common now. El Tovar Amphitheater. The first thing to be observed is that El Tovar rests in the center of the curve of a wide crescent, named El Tovar Amphitheater, the arms of which extend out into the heart of the canyon, and shut in the scenery from the east and west, concentrating the view. These arms afford an excellent opportunity for seeing the various carboniferous deposits. The topmost is the Cherty limestone, the layers of which lead the eye to the cross-bedded sandstone, a creamy buff in color, and composed of a soft, sugary sand. Each of these walls is from 500 to 600 feet high, though in some parts of the canyon they are reduced to not more than 400 feet. Maricopa and El Tovar points. El Tovar is 6,866 feet above sea level. The highest part of the point on the left is 7,050 feet, and on the right 7,000 feet. The point to the left, Maricopa Point, is a portion of the great promontory known as Hopi Point, to which all canyon visitors should go. That to the right is El Tovar Point. Heights and depths. The height of the lime and sandstone walls can readily be measured by looking down upon the rudely carved mass of red sandstone slightly to the left, which has been called the Adelship. The top of this is 5,867 feet above sea level. Now look up to the Maricopa Point above, 7,050 feet. The difference is 1,183 feet, which is practically the height of these two strata. Bright Angel Creek. Almost at the first glance, the attention is arrested by the break in the north wall, slightly to the right of where we stand, which makes a wide lateral gorge running at right angles to the main course of the river. This is Bright Angel Gorge, showing the course of Bright Angel Creek, which flows between its lower walls. It received its name from Major Powell when he and his party descended the river. Earlier in their explorations, they had ascended a side stream, and one of the men had declared it to be a dirty devil of a river, and for many years it bore the name Dirty Devil River, until Powell changed it on the map to Fremont River. When, later, this exquisitely pure and beautiful side stream was reached, the great explorer determined that as one stream had been named after the Prince of the Powers of Darkness, he would name this after the bright and beautiful powers, hence the name Bright Angel. A reference to the chapter How the Canyon Was Formed will explain how this side gorge came into existence, and also account for the great upthrust of the granitic rock at its mouth. For the most casual observer cannot fail to note the presence of this rock much higher than it is seen elsewhere. The North Wall. Before paying particular attention to the vast forms that crowd the interior of the canyon, let us follow the old of the massive wall on the north side. This is part of the Great Kaibab Plateau, the highest wall of the whole canyon system. Its elevation is 8,300, as against 6,866 feet at El Tovar, and it is 13 miles in an airline from the south rim, where the hotel is located, to the north rim. The reason for this difference in elevation is explained in the chapter, How the Canyon Was Formed. In brief, it is that, during a process of faulting, the north wall was thrust up above the level of the south wall. Features above Bright Angel Creek. In any other region but here, this Bright Angel Gorge and the massive figures of rock that sentinel and guard it would be regarded as a scenic marvel, but here it is a mere trivial incident in the greater scenery of the greater canyon. Yet it is well to note the massive red sandstone points that are lined up on either side on the plateau, above the darkest recesses of the gorge, reminding one of the rows of sphinxes that guard the entrances of some of the Egyptian temples. Up Bright Angel Creek. Occasionally parties cross the river either by boat or in an iron cage suspended by a cable, and ascend to the north rim by means of a rude trail up Bright Angel Creek. As the trail for a part of the way ascends the floor of the gorge, down which the stream flows, and as it is exceedingly narrow, and without any way of escape in case of severe rain or flood, it is not always safe. To one, however, who loves a rough and adventurous trip, the ascent of this gorge will probably give great satisfaction. A little more than a third of the way up, a waterfall is passed, called Ibn Falls. The trail winds and twists with the course of the stream, and finally reaches the summit at an elevation of 8,500 feet, not far from Greenland Spring. From here one may go east over the Walhalla Plateau to Nijai Point, and overlook the Chewer Valley at the mouth of Marble Canyon, where Dr. Wolcott spent a winter studying the Algonquian strata of that region. To the west is Point Sublime, Powell Plateau, and other scenery of an unusually majestic character. Features of the North Wall. But let us now return to the main North Wall before us. The green tufts, that at this distance appear as grass or shrubs, partially covering the top of the wall, and descending the slopes into the canyon, are in reality great trees, mainly pines and black birches, from 25 to over 100 and 150 feet in height. The forest that covers the Kaibab Plateau contains many majestic trees, and some of these have wandered over the rim, to peep into the depths of the abyss below. The cherty limestone strata are thus largely covered, but the next stratum is the clear band of cross-bedded sandstone, which corresponds to the second member of the geological series seen in the arm of the amphitheater at Maricopa Point, and is from 500 to 600 feet wide. Then the eye rests upon slopes of talus, which reach down to the red strata of varying thicknesses, which are deposited above the red wall limestone, the whitest member of the whole canyon group. These walls are cut and recessed into all kinds of shapes and forms, angles, promontories, and recesses, which, especially in the early morning and late afternoon, cast shadows of inexpressible beauty. The red wall limestone. We now come to the red wall limestone nearly 600 feet in thickness. What a striking, massive wall it is, and how impressive, when seen even at this immense distance. This wall is red, only because it is stained by the color washed down by the rain from the red strata above. In reality, it is a rich creamy lime, but only where the red strata above have been degraded and washed away does the natural color of this wall appear. The plateau. Below the red wall limestone, there are several strata of red and gray and olive rocks that slope to the plateau. This plateau is not quite so wide on the north side as on the south, owing to Eltover being located in the recess of a great amphitheater. It is from these plateaus that the finest views of the real canyon can be obtained. The visitor, sitting on the porch or on the rim at Eltover, cannot realize that below his feet, as it were, there is an almost exact duplication of the wall and slopes of talus, the thrilling precipices, the alcoves, recesses, promontories and the like, that he sees on the north side. And yet a trip down the trail onto the plateaus reveals these stupendous facts in a manner that is surprising even to those who, for years, have been familiar with them. How much more, then, is such an experience to a tyro? I have met men who were worldwide travelers, and who were visiting the canyon for the first time. Some of these were expert geologists, yet they refused to go down the trail, with the excuse that they could fully grasp the scenery from the rim. But that is impossible. The human mind cannot realize the effects of vastness and power this canyon scenery produces, except when one stands below the cliffs and looks up. And where the opportunity is given of looking both up to towering walls and down over beetling precipices, the effect is enhanced. The Tonto Sandstones. Below the plateau, slight slopes lead the eye to the last of the stratified rocks, the Tonto Sandstones of the Cambrian period. These are readily distinguished, mainly by their deep buff color and the fact that generally they are found resting on the Archean or unstratified rocks, locally though incorrectly termed the granite, which makes the inner gorge through which the river runs. This granite is in the main of blackish gneiss. The Algonquian strata. Though the Tonto sandstones usually occupy the location named, there is a deviation from this in the presence of some remnants of strata of the Algonquian period, directly opposite El Tovar. This deviation is discussed in the chapter How the Canyon Was Formed. These remarkable rocks occur to the left west of Bright Angel Creek and lie immediately above the gneiss. Their brilliant red reveals them, and they can be followed up under the base of the Cheops, and to a small wash to the left of Osiris. At the mouth of Bright Angel, they rest upon the Archean, with the Tonto sandstones above them, but just in front of the battleship a break in the gneiss occurs, and on the portion nearest us the Algonquian strata totally disappear, for the Tonto strata rest directly upon the gneiss. Zoroaster, Brahma and Deva temples. Now, in turn, let the eye rest upon the temples, towers and buttes that stand in the heart of the canyon, more or less detached from the main wall. To the right of Bright Angel Creek, striking buttes keep guard. The nearest is an angular mass of solid, unrelieved rock, sloping in a peculiarly oblique fashion. It is Zoroaster Temple, 7,136 feet in elevation. Close behind it is a more ornate and dignified mass, Brahma Temple, named after the first of the Hindu triad, the Supreme Creator, to correspond with the Shiva Temple, soon to be described, on the right. Shiva, the destroyer. Brahma, the creator. The one controlling the forces, that have destroyed the strata. The other dominating the powers that have brought these structures into existence. Brahma is 7,554 feet in elevation. Behind Brahma is another butte, which, however, cannot always be dissevered from the main wall. It has no cap of cherty limestone. It can be readily discerned, therefore, by its flat-topped appearance. It is Deva Temple, 7,344 feet above sea level. Buddha Temple and Cloister, Manu Temple. To the left of the Bright Angel Gorge, quite an assemblage of buttes awaits inspection. The dominating pile almost opposite Brahma across Bright Angel is Buddha Temple, and below it is Buddha Cloister. Beyond this is another butte, which, however, at times, can scarcely be detected from the main walls of the Kaibab. Yet it is a separate butte of great proportions, and is named Manu Temple, after the great lawgiver of the Hindus. Buddha's elevation is 7,218 feet, while Manu's is 7,192. Cheops Pyramid. To the left of Buddha Temple, and nearer to us, is a massive, though less ornately carved monument than Buddha. It is Cheops Pyramid, a detached mass of the red wall limestone, which, however, is rapidly losing its red color, owing to the disappearance of the red strata from above. Cheops is 5,350 feet in elevation, and is of a peculiar shape, as of some quaint and oriental device of symbolic significance. Isis and Shiva temples. Just above, and farther to the left, is a peculiar temple, resting upon sloping taluses of the red strata beneath, its cap formed of a lone, narrow ridge of cross-bedded sandstone. It has two great cloisters in front, and is named Isis Temple, after the feminine god of the Egyptians. Isis has an elevation of 7,028 feet, and is the eastern support of the gigantic rock mountain which towers over all the lesser structures. This is Shiva Temple, a solid mass, sliced off from the main Kaibab. The elevation is 7,650 feet, and it is thus described by Dutton, who named it colon it is the grandest of all the buttes, and the most majestic in aspect, though not the most ornate. Its mass is as great as the mountainous part of Mount Washington. The summit looks down 6,000 feet into the dark depths of the inner abyss, over a succession of ledges as impracticable as the face of Bunker Hill Monument. All around it are side gorges, sunk to a depth nearly as profound as that of the main channel. It stands in the midst of a great throng of cloister-like buttes, with the same noble profiles and strong lineaments as those immediately before us, with a plexus of awful chasms between. In such a stupendous scene of wreck, it seems as if the fabled destroyer might find an abode not wholly uncongenial. Horus Temple. Guardian temples to the west of Isis are Horus and Osiris. The former is nearer to the river. It is capped with the white sandstone, and is so closely sculptured that white fragments have fallen upon the sloping red talus beneath. The whole appearance is not unlike a giant head of an Arab, with its streaming folds of white reaching far over the neck down the back. It rests upon a massive block of the red wall limestone, which presents a bold face to the east. Its elevation is 6,150 feet. Osiris Temple. Behind Shiva's Osiris Temple, with an elevation of 6,637 feet. At the proper angle it is seen to be as prominent before Shiva as is Horus, but our angle of vision gives it the retreating effect. It is a gracefully domed temple in the cross-bedded sandstone, and clearly reveals its 500 feet superior height over Horus. The walls seen behind Osiris are not those of Point Sublime, as some suppose. This massive promontory on the north side is hidden by the nose of Maricopa Point. The walls are a portion of the Kaibab Plateau, leading towards Point Sublime, but not a part of it. Ra Pyramid. In front of Horus is the tower of a symmetrically constructed pyramid in the red strata, far more like Cheops than is the structure of that name. It is 5,997 feet above the level of the sea, a memorial of the great Ra, far greater than any temple erected by human hands. The Maiden's Breast. At the end of Maricopa Point is a majestic structure bigger than many national capitals combined, yet so small here as hitherto to have passed unnoticed. It is crowned, however, with a small nipple in red sandstone, to which the Havasupais give a name signifying the Maiden's Breast. It is 5,450 feet high, quite a height for an earthly maiden. Miles of walls of varying lengths. As we look at these wonderful walls, a new idea dawns upon us. The engineer tells us that the canyon is 217 miles long. That, however, is only the length of the river, as it runs its winding way along. But the walls cannot thus be measured. Take the red wall limestone, and follow it on its devious way, in and out of deeply alcoved recesses, upside gorges and down again, around the curves of cloisters, and along the bases of the great buttes. The aggregate distance followed will be many thousands of miles. The strata that have the longer course, on account of their greater extent of terracing, are those that make an 800 feet wide band of gray and bright red sandstone, which rests above the red wall limestone. Angel Plateau and Indian Garden. Now let the eye fall upon the plateau beneath. This is named Angel Plateau. The green near its center has the first claim. This green patch is called Indian Garden, for in past years, before the white man wrested his possessions from him, a certain family of the Havasupais used to farm in a crude way on this spot. When I first visited this plateau, some 17 or more years ago, the remnants of the old Indian irrigating ditches could be seen. Now it is cultivated by the white man to good effect, and delicious watermelons and cantaloupe as well as tasty vegetables grow in abundance. This is called halfway down to the river in distance. The elevation is 3,876 feet, so that from our 6,866 feet we gaze down 2,990 feet. Many who go down the trail do not go below this plateau. A point can be seen, also the line of the trail leading to it, from which an excellent and extensive view of the raging river, with some of its rapids, may be had. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.